Hello, everyone. Happy Sunday. Today is November 9th, and I'd like to welcome you to our live show of Restoring Our Roots podcast, the voice of the Decriminalized Nature Movement. This podcast is a gathering space where we explore the wisdom of entheogenic plants and fungi, the beauty of natural healing, and the importance of reconnecting to the sacred earth. Twice a month, we'll hear from visionaries, healers, and advocates who are working with entheogenic plants and fungi, exploring realms of consciousness, and returning us to a balanced relationship with nature. My name is Larry Norris. I am the co-founder of Decriminalized Nature and the National Organizing Director. I really help people out all across the U.S. Training, I think we just even trained about 15 people in our last orientation last Wednesday or a couple Wednesdays ago to get out there and to start doing the education, the destigmatization, and changing policy in their local jurisdictions. If you are interested in supporting this on your local level, please reach out to us at decriminalizednature.org. It's been an incredible movement, and there's a lot of people out there, a lot of community, so it's great to meet up with folks and learn and share and talk about your experiences, etc. We're also really excited to have our producer Rachel helping us behind the scenes here. Thank you, Rachel, for all your help. She's dressed up in some great costume for a previous streaming show, so maybe at the end we'll have some superhero time later. But in the meantime, really just want to thank Rachel for all you're doing. We're here on live on YouTube, also live on Rumble and Odyssey. But in a week or so, Rachel will be putting us on all of our Spotify, Apple, and other podcast platforms. If you are interested in helping us out and donating to the program, please go ahead and click the donate button in the bottom there, and we can continue doing the show. We have quite a lineup of guests coming up all the way, I think, till April now we're booked out, so it's pretty exciting. But today's guest, I'm really excited to have on board because we've been rubbing elbows. Dell's been doing this for quite some time. I know that Del Jolly's here today, and he was working with Charlotte's Web, I think, for a period of time. But then he went and was helping out with the Decriminalized Denver Initiative, which passed a month before we passed in Oakland here in California. Denver just focused mostly on mushrooms, and maybe we can talk a little bit about how that was repealed as well, which is an unfortunate circumstance with all the hard work he did there. But we... really excited to see, and that really helped motivate us here in Oakland. He's also the co-founder of Unlimited Sciences, which has been doing really amazing work in terms of what a lot of public health officials are looking for and city council members are looking for is like, what happens afterwards? Where's the data? And the hardest part, I know, Del, we can talk about this too, but I've talked with other folks, is how do you find the data of no data? You know, it's like if there's not bad experiences, how do you show that to somebody who's like, well, show me where the bad experiences are? Well, there aren't any. Well, show us the data. Well, there's stats for that. So what other ways can we think about design methodology and research and coming into the public health field, and also just helping doing like surveys and other things to sort of figure out what's going on in the community and help us pass future policy again. Del was a really big part of, I don't want to forget about this, the Decriminalized Nature Boulder County and Denver crew out there, or the Colorado crew. And I believe that you all really pushed hard to make what is a statewide policy in Colorado as best as it could be, instead of sort of falling the same way that the Oregon policy did, which we can see without the decrim side of it has become a little bit overexpensive and a lot of sort of burdensome regulations and things that are really create a lot of expense for the individual, for the facilitator, and for the state as well. So I'm really happy that you were able to do all that work. We were able to get all four categories of plants and mushrooms passed in Colorado, with, I think there's some exceptions around the Ibogaine, but maybe that's been changed by at this point in time as well. But really appreciate all your work. Del's been a super advocate for decrim over the many years. I know Del gets pushed in all these different directions, but you've always stood strong to the importance of decrim, and we really want to thank you for that. So thank you for being here. Looking forward to lots of great conversations. And how are you doing today, Del?
Doing great. Thank you so much for having me on, Larry. And yeah, it's been quite a journey. And yeah, the decrim movement has always been the center of my heart. You know, it's like, it's very, very important that we remember, like, the most important thing throughout this whole thing is our own sovereignty to use these medicines. So happy to be here and very curious where the conversation will go.
Great. Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Maybe we could just start off with a little bit of your background. You know, I know you started maybe in the cannabis realm, and you find yourself sort of in the mushrooms and entheogens or psychedelics realm. What was your process there? How did you get here? And sort of what are your sort of big sort of dreams as you see the movement move forward?
Yeah, I started, you know, in the cannabis space, but it was more so, I would say I started in the food space, because I was anti-marijuana, you know, 9 years ago, right? Weed is the devil's lettuce and all the things. And I had bought a property where I was starting to grow my own food and or garden more. And I had 10 apple trees on my property. And a friend of mine said, "Boy, you really take food serious, but you don't really understand that medicine can be the same way. And cannabis in particular is the same kind of idea, growing your own." And I read a book by Michael Pollan, not the How to Change Your Mind book, but the what was the name?
The Botany of
The
Desire, maybe?
what was it?
Was it Botany of Desire or something like that?
No, it was oh, I cannot believe I'm forgetting it right now. It'll come to me in a moment, but just about food and the food process and how it how we don't look at the way that we're growing our food. And so I read that book and it started to change my mind on how I approached that. And a friend of mine said, "You're against cannabis. You should watch this documentary. It's called The Culture High." And in The Culture High, there was a man who was trying to give his son cannabis for his seizures. And I remember the gentleman saying, all I want is to hear my son say, I love you." And the cannabis is the only thing that has gotten him to a point where he was coming out of being nonverbal and helping with his seizures. And all I saw was another father. I have three kids, another father trying to help his kid. And then I realized, whoa, it's like me, I'm part of the problem. I am going against this man trying to help his kid by all the time I'm popping off about weed's terrible, And so I found an organization in Colorado Springs called the Realm of Caring. This was started by my co-founder in Unlimited Sciences, Heather Jackson, whose son had pediatric epilepsy, and Charlotte of Charlotte's Web, their mom Paige, started the Realm of Caring to help educate people on how to use cannabis for their seizures. This was the movement. This is what, in my opinion, changed and started this whole plant medicine journey for everyone. Moms trying to help their kids, parents trying to help their kids use cannabis to help with seizures. And so I volunteered for them. I was really moved by my own prejudice of these plants and realized that if I can change, anyone can change. And how do we do that? Because this is ridiculous. And if there's one thing that I struggle with is it's the government telling us what we can and cannot do. And so I took it really personally, and I couldn't work for the Realm of Caring. So they said, "Hey, you should work for Charlotte's Web." And so that was the beginning of my plant medicine journey, working to help change the narrative and hopefully change some opinions on these substances that we've been told are drugs. And so that's where I got my feet wet. And then that just kind of snowballed. I just was wondering, what are all the other things that I've been lied to about? And that led to psychedelics, and had a psychedelic experience that absolutely changed my life. And I just needed to get involved. I needed to do whatever I could. And it just so happened that Kevin Matthews and his crew at the Decrim Denver initiative had just gotten started. This is in early 2018. And so I have some resources to influential people who are mostly professional athletes. And I thought, hey, how can I help you? And so I became the outreach director for the Decrim Denver movement and started to have some folks post some things about what was happening in Denver. And then as time moved on, we obviously passed that in May of 2019. And then before that, as that was transpiring, I thought, there's going to be a lot of people who are going to start hearing the word psychedelic or psilocybin, and they're going to want to know, hey, can that help me? And we need data, just like we did with the Realm of Caring on the cannabis use for kids. They worked with Johns Hopkins to record and register what was going on with cannabis in the kids. And when you partner with an institute like that, it really validates what you're doing at. Psilocybin, and that was the beginning of Unlimited Sciences in the study that we've now completed. That is the largest study on how people are using psilocybin in the real world. You know, so that's kind of the beginning of where I got started and started with this journey.
Great, yeah, thank you. Yeah, and just for clarification, when you say psilocybin, you're more focusing on mushrooms of psilocybin versus synthetic psilocybin, but that's kind of what is mostly available probably in Colorado. But did Colorado also allow for synthetic psilocybin, or is it only nature-based psilocybin in terms of the statewide approach?
I'm Prop 122. I'm not sure if it is synthetic psilocybin as well, as far as like what they use at Johns Hopkins, you know, 25 milligrams of psilocin and but I know that obviously they're using natural mushrooms for that, because there's the first grow just popped off a few months ago. So
great. Yeah, so I mean, it's so interesting, because you have such a you know, you've been at both sides of the divide, so to speak, right? One time being very sort of prohibitionist mindset, and then now kind of on this other side. And I imagine probably, you know, all of not I know, I think I probably started, but even maybe in my younger years, it was because there's so much stigma out there and so much, you know, sort of, you know, nasty information. You know, in my teens, I was like, oh, what is this? You know, and kind of, you kind of get swept up in it. And without any other information out there, it's really difficult to say, oh, wait a second, you know, because it's this one scary thing that's unknown. And until you try it, you don't really get why people are excited about it or what's going on. For folks out there that are working on, you know, destigmatizing to their community, to their family and friends, maybe even to themselves, do you have any like tips of what helped you through that process as you went from prohibitionist to non-prohibitionist, and any things that you can know that were like really helpful for people that you were speaking to help them sort of open their minds a little bit when they're really sort of structured on their previous worldviews?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things too, right, we're a product of the DARE movement, you know, where all we were fed and the only information we had is what we were told in class by like a police officer. Right. That was the limits of the knowledge that was provided to us. But I just feel like anymore today in the era of information, you kind of have no excuse anymore. Mm. You have no excuse not to say, okay, you say the word psilocybin or psychedelics, and I have this emotion or this notion about what it is. Well, you could at the tips of your fingers find out pretty quickly what is factual and what is not. And I'll say, as AI progresses and we see our news cycles, you have to be very diligent about what you do consume, if you will. But it's out there. And really at the end of the day, for me, what it was a mother explaining to me her life with her daughter, where basically it was, you know, when Maddie wakes up, I have to feed her as quickly as possible, because I know she's going to start seizing, and she's going to start seizing so hard and so long and all day, she's going to pass out. And then she's going to wake up for lunch. And then I'm going to have to feed her as quickly as I can before she starts seizing and seize so hard that she passes out. And then we're going to, and that was her life. And it's so challenging to have a perspective based in, you know, whatever it was, and not have a heart and just say, wow, this is, you know, pretty crystal clear. You're not getting high. You're not doing all the bullshit that we've been fed. And it was like, boom, done. I'm no longer against this stuff, because it's crystal clear. This is not what I was told what it is. Does it get abused? Sure. Just like alcohol, which was something that I was consuming ad nauseum, right? Like, just like so many other people. Or, I mean, you just think about all the things that we consume, and how we do it can be very inappropriate. And some people consume cannabis inappropriately. And some people consume psychedelics inappropriately. But for the vast majority of us, and it's a really important medicine. And so I want people to understand that it doesn't take much to
Not just stop it, but encourage people being thrown in prison for it. You know, that's like
Right,
sort of
exactly.
brutal.
It's
It's like, you know,
like the
ruin your life, you know. Like, yeah.
right, the one, I don't know, meme or whatnot. Like if you're opposed to gay marriage, then just don't get married. You know, like it's super simple. If who has time anymore to go out of their way to be a moron, I guess is what it is. So
Yeah, no, and I think also like what you're saying in terms of even just the de-authorization of these laws and these points of view, once you sort of say, wait, if cannabis isn't as bad as everyone says, then what does it say about all these other materials that are also being stigmatized? When we know for, you know, I did a talk the other day, you know, I think the first known like, you know, psychedelic phenethylamine or entheogen would be like in terms of archaeological evidence, you're looking at 8600 BC for San Pedro Huachuma cactus, right? That's 10,600 years ago, you know, like people have been doing this for a long time, right? So, so that's one side. And then also the other side is like, if we're serious about, you know, because everyone that I think it feels like when I approach people that have that same sort of stigma or that mind frame or that like dare mindset, it's always about safety and danger and we need to criminalize because of that. But we don't criminalize things like poisonous mushrooms. We don't criminalize things that, you know, like alcohol and tobacco, which you see are much higher in terms of risk factors than a lot of these other substances combined. You know, even I always joke about the selfie stat, right? More people have died taking selfies than all these substances combined. We're not criminalizing selfies, you know, or jumping out of an airplane for, you know, skydiving. Like all the we take risks all the time in our lives, right? But I think you're right on is like, you know, why would we want to throw someone in prison for that? You know, somebody should be able to choose what they ingest, how they engage with it, you know, and I don't necessarily agree with, so, you know, like say it can be abused in many different ways, but that's how you learn too sometimes, right? You know, and I said some, you know, it's even sometimes on the dance floor when people are like, oh, that's recreational, is that really sacred? And man, I can't tell you how many times I've had a sacred experience in the middle of the dance floor, you know, so.
yeah, absolutely. And that's just it too. It's if people want to use some things recreationally, really at the end of the day, it's okay. You know, you get happy accidents there. Not even just happy accidents. The dance floor is sacred, right? That is the modern, you know, fire, you know, where we're gonna circle around the fire and we're gonna dance. And I've had some of my most tremendous connective moments, as I'm sure many of the listeners have, on a dance floor, right? It's super important. So, and you know, just like with the alcohol, I remember that was a big issue. I don't want people driving around on mushrooms. Yeah, neither do we.
What did the
And we
mushroom take?
also have laws in place for that, just like alcohol, right? Like this is not like, don't be silly. That is against the law. It's always going to be against the law. If you get pulled over and you're on mushrooms, I hope you go to jail, right? I hope there's a consequence to that ridiculous action. But there shouldn't be a consequence for taking the mushrooms if you're doing it safe by in your own safe setting. But the moment you step outside of that and you put other people at harm, I don't care what the substance is, you are no longer participating in what we agreed upon,
Yeah,
you
right. There's
know?
already DUI laws out there, right? But we don't need to create new things, which is, I guess, what kind of what got cannabis in a bit of a bind too, is because they thought they had to create a whole new regulatory framework because it's this unique thing that's so different and so much more dangerous than everything, which I think is a problem anyway. But, you know, to wind back to what you're saying a little bit earlier about how you know education is right at our fingertips, you know, and we hear that a lot, and yet we always hear we need more education. So how do you balance that? And also, where do you go to find, you know, you don't need to necessarily, you know, promote anything unless there's an awesome place for education that you're aware of. But like, you know, how do people find education if, or how do you find a way to get it to the people that have no idea that at a party somewhere someone might give them something, so they never even bothered to do the education? Like, well, do we need a redare? You know, like, how do we do this? You know?
That would be wonderful if the government would get behind and actually put some real education out there about these things. It's really challenging with a substance like or psychedelics as a whole because the narrative has been what it is. And so for me personally, what I see is the quickest way to educate people. It's through story. You know, it's through when I see a young girl having seizures and then ingesting cannabis through a feeding tube and she stops seizing, done. Education done. I'm ready
Right.
to learn more and I'll go after it. And so that's kind of where, you know, what I thought of. How do I personally change my the opinion of someone such as myself, you know? And so for me, it's kind of, I always thought like the Michael Jordan effect, right? Michael Jordan says, drink Gatorade or buy the shoe. People go, okay, cool. Where is it? How much? I got you, you know? So for me personally, athletes are important. And that's maybe I have some, founders in another organization. I have a functional mushroom company with professional athletes, and these are people who people might know because they've been in the psychedelic space now. And that's Rashad Evans, UFC fighter, who you have this persona of this guy who's a former UFC champ. He's a Hall of Famer. He's this opposing figure, and he's speaking about how transformative these experiences have been for him and how healing they've been for him. And in a person like me who sees him and knows him as this, you know, just badass fighter guy. And I know he's taking care of his body. He's built a career on making sure he is operating as optimally as possible. So I know he's in tune. And now he's saying, hey, these are really important. These have helped me, you know, progress post-career, progress in so many ways. It's going to catch my ear, right? It's going to be a challenge if you're presenting in a way that maybe a conservative person that, you know, they might not want to hear it from you. But if you're their former childhood, you know, star who played football in the NFL, what's he talking about? Okay, let's hear more. And so I think it's you've got to educate through relating, right? And oh, I could relate with Rashad. I know I do a lot of jiu-jitsu, and so I know what it takes to hone my body and be physical. Oh, wow, he's talking about a substance I've never And so I think that storytelling is important because it's hard to say, hey, go to this website. And if you're not really in it because you have a prejudice against the thing, you're not going to do the research, right? But I see, you know, Tools for Titan, Tim Ferriss book, one of the passages in there that I really enjoyed, it just a very, very simple sentence that I try to hold dear to my heart now is strong convictions loosely held. Right. And that's the way I wish people would operate. Having it's good to have a good opinion and it's good to get passionate about things, but hold those things loosely because if someone comes with new information and, you know, presents something that you've never heard, if you're going to put up a stone wall, which seems to be kind of our culture these days, everyone just, we know what's right and forget that side. This is my side. I'm not even going to listen. It's going to present a big problem in the future. But if we can listen, I think that will lead to education. And if you're genuinely curious, we have to have a level of curiosity around all these things. We should be curious too. Are there any, you know, the first law of alchemy, you know, equivalent exchange? Are there going to be any problems if we use these substances too often? You know, there's something to consider. How frequently can we use them? Should I take a step back? You know, I don't know. If someone has new information, I'm gonna listen. And so it takes kind of a curious mind to educate yourself. And so I don't have the answers, but I do think story and relatable stories are important to start bridging the gap.
Yeah, and a couple of things I want to touch on there real quick, but I think one thing that is so important, I was talking to somebody about this last night, was or maybe 2 nights ago, how it's so important for then the elders to come out of the closet. Because if we're really serious about sharing our stories and sharing our narratives, if you're just talking about it, what we're really trying, in this conversation was about how do we make sure that the youth can figure out more information, know where to go, have what's a bad trip like, if there's one that comes up, how do I work with it, all these other types of things. But I think until, and that's one thing I always see missing, this intergenerational, across many, many generations conversation that's happening, because there's like, oh, we did this in the 60s, or then the next generation, we did this in the rape scene, or the next generation, the dare thing, or whatever, blah, 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 all the way down the line. And then there's like always these like sort of silos of generations that, oh, we can't talk. But in this kind of scenario, we're talking about human consciousness, right? And what better way to start diving into that than like talking to the different generations about how it is that it worked for them, or different sort of things that have been considered. So, and I think part of that is really coming out of the closet and really sharing that, you've had personal experiences, or that these experiences were really transformative for you. And so you see that in sort of the sports world, you see that a little bit. But it's interesting to me that the UFC fighters, it seems to be more of them around in terms of willing to come out and share comparatively. I mean, boxers, you really have Mike Tyson, you have, hockey players as Dan Carcillo, you have a couple football players, Ricky Williams and Aaron Rodgers. So like a couple basketball players who I shouldn't name, but I've been kind of surprised, like, oh, okay, talked about ayahuasca and things like that. But it's minimal. But then you have the UFC field, and there seems to be a lot more people having that kind of, what do you think is unique to that field, that or that interest area, that more people are having that conversation there?
It's an individual sport. It's an individual sport that, in the NFL, everyone's fighting for their jobs every week. It's a very fragile system. And, in the NFL, you could take Tom Brady out of the game and you're still going to play. You're still going to play. You're going to have a backup quarterback, might not do as well, but your team's still playing. And the UFC, you pull Conor McGregor out of the headlining card, you just lost the whole, attraction. And so the beautiful thing about that is they're in a position to be their own unique, beautiful butterflies. And they could say whatever the hell they want because they're their own brand. And in that sport, which, has a lot of bravado and a lot of showmanship, Conor McGregor, I mean, he's a good fighter, of course, but he certainly is not as good as he puts himself out to be. But he is hands down the best promoter ever, right? And so if Conor McGregor says, "Hey, I'm doing ayahuasca all the time and I love it and it's a thing," like no one's gonna say, "Oh, you can't fight. You're off the team." They need him, And so, and I think that I think it's kind of a beautiful thing too that. The fighters are coming forth and they're fighting and telling their stories of what's important for them. It's kind of a mentality, I think, too, to, do your own thing, if you will. But it'd be nice, and that's some of the things that, I'm working on behind the scenes, more NFL guys in particular. Unfortunately or fortunately, where culture really values the NFL and what
Reds and circuses.
some guy who plays a damn game has a better, take on these substances than someone who's tried and true is, it's a product of our culture. So we have to play the game. You know what I mean? And so, cool. I happen to know a few of those guys, right? How can we structure something where you guys can speak about it intelligently? Because that's the problem too, is I see some guys who I'm like, please get the microphone away from that guy. Don't let him talk anymore. Who like, you know what I'm talking about as far as sometimes some people just should not be representing these sacred medicines in the way that they are. But then there's also some people who hold it very near and dear and do a fantastic job, but we should be We should be listening to researchers. We should be listening to, moms. We should be listening to NFL players, UFC fighters, and most importantly, we should probably be listening to more of the indigenous lineage who's been doing this for thousands of years, and what they think. I think that that's a really unique thing that we do in this space, is we pay all this lip service to indigenous and BIPOC communities, and oh yeah, let's put this collective on the stage at MAPS and let them have a conversation. But the moment they start talking about the mysticism and the unidentified, unmeasurable accounts that come from these substances, oh yeah, okay, that's great or what, but we really think it's bullshit. We do. And I know we do, because we could see how all these ceremonies are being held. Anyone, no one's opening, appropriately and ceremonially and traditionally, and inviting and putting at bay some of these entities that indigenous people do understand. There's an incredibly good podcast. I'm sure your listeners are familiar with it, The Emerald. If you haven't heard The Emerald, there's a episode called Guardians and Protectors. And it's something that I feel anybody, especially here in the United States, who are about to participate in these substances, you better listen to that and truly understand what it is you're doing. Because I do think that we are working with things that are beyond our understanding in the Western world, that indigenous people do understand. And boy, if we could only, strong convictions loosely held, and listen to some of those voices, and try to understand some of these more complicated matters that are not of this world, I think we'd be better for it.
Yeah, it seems like almost a clash of paradigms that happens there. You see them, on the map stage, and then everyone's trying to assimilate those voices into a clinical model, which is at odds with the worldview right at the beginning, because it's an extractive model without the understanding of spirit or the sacred, or maybe in talk, but maybe I don't know of any doctors that's part of their protocol to hold space, and even people are getting pushback for any kind of sacred within the clinical model, but like, what about holding space that's not just the room space? What about the set and setting that's in the realms beyond the liminal realms, and these are conversations that a lot of these cultures have had many times in the past, but you don't see these in these particular clinical or mental model approaches. And so I think that's something that's really going to be, eventually there's going to have to be some sort of deeper, larger conversation or communication about that, or they're just going to be so split off from each other that, they're going to be speaking about different things. But I think that's something hopefully we'll see more of. And also just realizing too, it's like, the other side of it too is I see a lot of times there's a push to sort of slam indigenous voices into the conversation, despite the fact that maybe it's never been part of their tradition. For example, you see this in Minnesota and just cultures there, like, this isn't really something we've been doing before in the past. And so like the but what maybe should be gotten to is the worldview, the idea of the sacred, the idea of the spirit, the idea of the ceremonial, the ritual. These are the types of things, rather than saying, you now are an expert in psychedelics, which then puts them at risk as well, because now all of a sudden, okay, well, this is an illegal thing, that should I be even talking about this anyway? But talking about this broader context of how do we sit in ceremony, how do we sit with each other, what is right relationship, what is ancestor or spirits of plants and mushrooms, what is that type of conversation? So those are the types of things that I think will eventually shake out. But in the meantime, yeah, you're definitely seeing these sort of clashes that happen. And kind of wind back a little bit more again to what you're saying around the people that are out there. I don't know if you've paying attention, but right now this guy Brian Johnson, who's the anti-aging guy, is live streaming his 5 gram mushroom experience to talk about how this is going to help him with anti-aging. My thought initially was he's never done mushrooms before, he's going to do 5 grams, he's going to be live streaming it, or sort of pseudo live streaming it, because someone's going to be doing the thing. Like, what if he has a bad ex maybe it's a tricky experience, somebody that spent his whole life to stay alive, don't die. And what do mushrooms do? They decompose you, and they tell you about life and death, and they show you that death is just another part of life. What is that? I mean, I'm going to kind of be keeping up on it. I've never really been too interested in what they're all his all about, but in this particular moment, I'm like, okay, I'm very curious what happens when that worldview then has this big experience. what needs to shift, what needs to change, and how would he look at things differently after this? Have you heard anything about this or any thoughts around that?
Yeah, it's funny that you say that because I just saw that this morning that he was doing that. I know that guy. I follow him because he totes himself as a like a longevity athlete or biohacking athlete. And his products in particular, I do take one of them. It makes sense. The science is real and that's good. But I do find it really interesting that a guy's whose entire identity is based on, his life and longevity is about to do something that will show him like that shit doesn't matter, buddy. Your whole identity is about to be squashed. I mean, I don't know, probably not, because that's the other thing too, is like sometimes these substances don't work on people the way that
You get that
they do.
non-specific amplifier, he'll be even more interested in longevity after this. But
Oh
I think that's a common, phenomenological experience is like, okay, you're gonna review death, you're gonna sort of go through that process, you're gonna realize it's not as scary. So maybe he'll still be on the longevity thing, but maybe that endpoint won't be so frightening because you just realize that's part of the transition that happens. But yeah, worldviews are bumping into each other all over the place right now across many different, areas of expertise and interests and things like that. So it's a unique time to be living in when these conversations that you don't actually expect to be being had by somebody, they're coming together in front of them, and now they're having to deal with sort of the nuance there. And then, like you said earlier, this is what helps us have nuance. And we're in a space now where everyone is siloed and polarized, and nuance, I think, is the name of the game right now.
We actually had Ben Greenfield was on our board of advisors back in the day when we first started Unlimited Sciences, and then he dropped off because he I think he had a religious experience or got back into the Christian faith and decided to drop all of his board memberships. Ben's a huge biohacker. He's like the OG biohacker guy, and so to each their own. They're gonna do their things. I live streaming your mushroom trip and measuring it for a longevity product is probably exactly what we don't want, but okay, here we are. There's a lot of unique people in this space, and it's frustrating because it's like, hey, where were you guys when we were trying to raise some money? Just a little bit of money. $500 would go for our campaign to help decriminalize so you could have the safety to do your dumb shit live stream 5 gram deal.
Not all the time, Like how money there is in decrim, and how many people are making money off of it, or doing things that are, experiments based upon that, and then not really acknowledging, like, hey, this is the work of people that have been not just the passing of the policy, but the decades before of people just keeping it alive and keeping the conversation going and getting to the point where there's enough people to actually be able to move policy. I think about that a lot too. So yeah. And so let's before I know we're we have. Been enjoying all this time, but I don't want to go away without you talking a little bit more about Unlimited Sciences. Well, talk to us about Unlimited Sciences a little bit more.
It's in the 99th percentile of most read papers in that publication, which I'm very proud of. It's been cited in over 100 papers already, and it's only like 2.5 years old, which is not common to be cited so frequently. And so the underrepresented, we've published a paper with the Jungle Gayborhood, and it was an ayahuasca study on people who identify as gay. How does that show up in that community? How is that different than, say, just some bros getting together? How's that different from Single moms, how's that different from BIPOC community? How's that different from, our other study is a MENA study, Middle East, North African, mostly from Saudi Arabia, female refugees using ayahuasca. How are these populations utilizing these substances, and what are the outcomes for them? I think it's important to do that because it just shows that this isn't, the panacea everyone wants it to be. It is helpful for a lot of people, but how are other people utilizing these substances, and what is the good and bad that comes of it? And so we try to put together studies that do that. And so with our Johns Hopkins study, we've taken that data and we've condensed it. And what we are doing now is we have a phone line that people can call before they utilize these substances and ask questions. And that's something that other folks don't do because they are concerned about the repercussions of encouraging people to use a Schedule I narcotic. And we have every right to do that. We're simply providing information from a study. You don't call in and someone says, "Oh, I think you should do this." It is from our study, or from studies that in from the collective, this is what people are doing. So it's just a exchange of information, no opinions. It's just information. And what we're trying to do there is just help people have a more positive outcome and be prepared and answer some questions that they might have before experiencing these substances. So that's what I'm most proud of in trying to promote. It's good for, if someone's parents want to utilize psilocybin because they saw some story on Dateline and now they want to know about it, they could call someone who's going to reference Johns Hopkins information from them, as opposed to my bro over here who's done psilocybin a bunch and like, this is what you should do, put on some Pink Floyd and eat 5 grams and good luck,
Nothing wrong
so.
with that
Yeah, which is awesome, and you should do
either,
that.
by
No,
the way.
but it's more, how do we deliver this stuff to folks who aren't necessarily getting their information from their friends and peers or whatnot,
I mean, it's so interesting because I think the biggest critique that a lot of the clinical research gets right now is that it's very myopic. It's like, here's the exclusion and inclusion criteria. It's oftentimes affluent white folks who don't really have a lot of, like it's just very. So when we say, okay, can this really be talked about cross-culturally? Can we take these results and show that it would work for other different populations? We don't really know because people are coming up with different worldviews, different ideas, different perspectives on life, et cetera, et cetera. In your research studies, it sounds like you have sort of siloed out a variety of different groups. Is there one thing, I'm not sure if you're actually doing the data analysis as well, but is there one thing that you see is surprisingly different between each group? And is there another thing that you're like, wow, across the board, it seems like this happens? Is there some sort of dynamic there?
Yeah, I mean it's very interesting. For instance, the Middle Eastern North African, a lot of the folks who came to this ceremony is hosted by a very good friend of mine. And these people are growing up in a Muslim household, and obviously, the religion and culture are not supportive of this type of stuff. And so when this group came and they had this experience, everyone left feeling, fantastic, most, insightful, life-changing event I've ever had. Longitudinally, later down the line, when they go back to their families, go back to their countries, and are immersed in a culture that does not support this, the level of shame is higher than we see in a Western setting, because they have regrets about doing it because they are subjected to the idea that that was wrong and they should not never have altered in that way. And so, and there's many more nuances. That's just what's off the top of my head. I am not a data scientist. I'm a advocate more than anything. And so our studies are published, they're on our website. But I guess what it leads to is that, yes, they do have different populations are having different experiences and they're having different outcomes. And it makes sense, right? Culturally, how is that set up, right? I mean, a Shipibo culture would laugh about why we utilize these substances. You know, for our childhood trauma, it's just very different for different cultures. In a Muslim community is probably going to have a different outcome than, you know, a more, you know, San Francisco, right? Whether it's culturally okay and people are doing ayahuasca on the weekends in between their tech bro jobs, you know. So these outcomes are important. It's important to recognize that it's not the same for everyone, which again is why it's so challenging to pigeonhole into a pharmaceutical model, which shouldn't be done. But we should be able to and should highlight and show that while there are consequences and some obviously not always positive outcomes, it's a net positive for the studies that we've done.
Yeah, I think that probably taps into this idea. We have our obvious set and setting conversation, and then I believe Betty Eisner, who I think wrote a paper in the late 80s or something like that, she was talking about how what she called the matrix is also really critical, and that's the worldview, that's the culture you're coming from, that's in both on the front side, which sort of prepares the mind in a particular way, and also on the backside, where do you have the container that can really truly hold something that's a little bit different than what maybe the culture expects? So I think that's going to be the next tricky thing as we start to look at this across cultures and see cultures that maybe have some, stronger prohibitionist mindsets than others do, or even spiritual understandings. And even within a lot of spiritual contexts, you hear, well, that was a shortcut, or that's not a real mystical experience, or you cheated, or all that kind of thing. Even like within Christian and Baptist and other types of communities, Protestant, all these types of communities are like, no, we can't do that, because that's not a real mystical experience. So it, like, what is it about something like, if you think in that mindset, if God created everything that is here on the earth, why would eating something, I guess they'll go back to the apple and all that kind of thing. But it's just an interesting sort of framing in terms of how even the idea of a shortcut, like, that's pretty clear that nobody's taken these psychedelics, because it's a long journey after you have
It
the one experience,
is, and but also to anybody who would say something like that, it'd kind of be like, hey, look around. I think we need all the shortcuts we can get right now to get our shit back on track. What are you talking about? Like, what the world need the Western world does not need psychedelics. It needs a good meditation practice. You know what I mean? But meditation practice. And so we need the 2x4 of psychedelics to get hit upside the head. Hopefully you're not having to do it all the time, but maybe one time you just go, wow, I need to slow down. I need to, you know, change some things, whether it's what I'm consuming or, you know, visually consuming, physically consuming, you know, but yeah, we need as many shortcuts as we can get right now because, from what I see, the timeline's not looking great for us. And as we continue to hate each other for the dumbest reasons, you know, if you are identifying with a political party, you're lost. If that is such a priority to you right now, you are missing the point, you know, and that's just one thing, right? We are just chomping at the bit to argue and demean people for the littlest things. Our sympathy is out the window. And I mean, it's just so incredibly apparent. No matter where you stand on, you know, some of the more recent happenings in the world and assassinations and whatnot, I mean, just the level of, or the lack of empathy for what is going on in how quick everyone is to blame or point fingers or say it's this or say it's that. It's really scary. And if psychedelics can help us find some compassion, some common ground, and see that we truly are all one, I mean, yeah, please. We need that. I do believe that when the indigenous cultures of South America say that ayahuasca needs to spread to the Western world because it's going to help them in the long run. I think that that's the truth. It's important that this stuff has to spread because we've got to do something. So shortcuts be damned. I'm all about it. I will say one of our studies that we published is it's on Christians who use psychedelics has no effect on their faith. If anything, their faith becomes stronger. So
Yeah, and then we were
that's
talking
important.
about meditation earlier too, is like, you know, look at the sort of the Buddhist boom that happened after the 60s and 70s, and while they don't often talk about it, many of the people that are in those worlds right now and are studying and practicing and doing really deep meditations were inspired by that one or two single experiences of realizing, wow, there's more, and I'm totally missing out on how to tap into this. What kind of practices can I do so that every day I can sort of bring that forward a little bit. So yeah, absolutely. And before we get into our questions in a minute, I know I've always appreciated that you've had such a strong love and appreciation for the decriminalization model versus all these other models. Tell us a little bit about that in terms of like what you see as important in decriminalization comparatively to like a legalization or a medicalization framework.
Yeah, I've had such admiration for the work that you guys have done and in the arrows you've gotten in your back for leading in the front. I've said it in the past and I'll continue to always say it. The Decrim Nature organization and movement is hands down the most important entity in this space. And if we don't see that or understand why that is, I mean, I'm all about veteran using Ibogaine and moving that forward. I'm all about science, right? We work with the universities. We do the thing. I'm all about those channels. But damn it, if we don't decriminalize first, you are, you know, asking the wolves to watch the sheep. You know, and it's really quite interesting how hard in the paint people are going to kind of set up the exact same model that these substances kind of promise to eradicate and show us a new, better way. And so decriminalization for me, when we did it in Denver, I mean, it was cool. It was really, it felt so like, oh my God, I always tell my kids like this is that's probably going to be the most important thing my contribution to this earth will be is that effort we did in Denver. I think it's doesn't get enough, you know, flowers. Not to say that we need anything, but I guess what it is, it's like this is a people-led movement where they are taking their rights back in their own hands and not participating in the bullshit systems that are saying do it this way. And if that's not the foundation of what we build, we are going to have so many problems and it's going to go right back into a lack of access and only the affluent are going to be able to do this stuff. I mean, you even see that in Colorado in Prop 122, what we did pass, where we worked really hard to make it as equitable as possible. Come out here and do a mushroom trip for I think the best you'll be able to get it is $5,000. $5,000 for what?
Legalization framework. The decrim is a little bit different, but that would be like for the legalized regulated framework that
Yes. Yes. Right. And if we didn't lay the foundation of decriminalization, right? Because I'm all about the legal model. Iboga, it's now the new poster child of everybody's conversation because MDMA went by the wayside with the FDA ruling. And everybody's talking about Iboga. There's a lot of risk there. And I'm really kind of torn about, okay, how do we do this? Because I don't want that story of someone using it and dying. And then that becomes the, you know, the megaphone for someone to, oh, this is why we can't decriminalize. This is why we can't do it. But all in all, like if you're not working towards decriminalization before you do the legal thing, it's a fool's errand. It's not a smart thing to do. And so decrim first and everything else can follow, but decrim first. That's really important.
Yeah, especially when you have in this world that we live in, you give the tools of law enforcement to the companies that have the capital, and now you have to buy their product because otherwise you'll get arrested. And that just sounds about as dystopic as you possibly could have, especially when you're talking about, hey, how do I explore my inner worlds? What is me? What is it like to be a human being? What is it like to explore consciousness? Yes, it can help with these mental health issues, but personal and spiritual growth really is the base of a lot of these. So yeah, to be able to do that freely with learning how to grow your own plants or mushrooms, being able to exchange it in community, be able to share with peers that aren't trying to like either make a buck or trying to put you in a model that doesn't necessarily fit everybody. I think that's really the way to go. So yeah, thank you for your thoughts around that. And it's always good to hear that. And thank you for your work in Denver, and then also for everyone else that's doing this great work out there to continue working on the decrim. You hear a lot of times some of these deep pockets out there saying things like, well, decrim isn't viable. I was at a Global Psychedelic Week talk this on Wednesday, and the question that they asked, which was, is decrim viable? They changed it to, is decrim just? Well, that's an easy one. Of course it's just. But what the smear is by the deep pockets is it viable? Are politicians going to be okay with it? And it's really the easiest policy. You're saying stopping arresting people. It costs the least amount of money because you're saying, okay, we're not going to, spend any money on this issue. And it's not throwing it on every street corner. It allows the organic emergence of the underground. People aren't just going to randomly, okay, well, and maybe somebody be like, oh, I'm going to go find this and go do the thing. But now there's places to check with others. Now there's community that's being built. Now there's that intergenerational mentorship that's beginning, hopefully, to start here, where there can be some conversations between youth and elders who have tried these experiences. So thank you for your words on that, and let's continue to move that forward. And like I say, while the pendulum has swung a little bit this year, and I think that's due to some feelings of instability on the local level. DC, for example, now being federalized. Does that mean that the decrim is no longer there anymore? Because the police chief doesn't answer to the city council anymore. The police chief answers to Pam Bondi. He's going after Chicago or saying, okay, we're going to federalize Chicago or San Francisco. So that, like, some of these places that are ready to go, they're like, okay, do we want to make us, let's just figure out what's happening first. So a lot of what's happening right now, and even like I said, our last orientation, we had 10 or 15 people. Weekend at Columbia University or Columbia, Missouri University out there. And people are making it happen, even though it's just like sort of we're back to the roots again. Just like when COVID started, okay, we're not gonna like, how would nature handle a stressful situation? It doesn't flower and fruit. It goes back to the roots and builds its root structure and makes it strong. So then when the time comes, boom, we're ready to go, ready to fruit. Same with the mycelium network. Build that mycelium. When the moments get right, that 50-degree rain comes in, boom, all these fruits are popping up all over the place. So I think that's really been fun to see, at least from my side of things, because you can see the ebb and flow that's happening nationwide. You can see where all these people are coming from at the orientations and what they're learning about and why, they're getting involved. And again, for everybody out there, we do a monthly orientation. It's usually on the last Wednesday of the month at 3 p.m. Pacific. So please contact us if you are interested in making this happen. But thank you, Dell, for all your words. I want to pop this over to Rachel now. I know she has a couple questions from the audience there, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, again, I've got 3 kids. My oldest daughter Ayla is 18, my son West is 15, and my youngest Mavis is 9. And I remember, like I said, going to the Realm of Caring. And the story for me, it wasn't an athlete, right? It is a little girl. Maddie and her mom, and again, seeing their story, understanding it. I heard that story and I came home, and for whatever reason, my kids weren't there. And it was in the evening. And then when they got home, I just remember dropping to my knees and just crying and being so grateful for their health, you know? And embarrassed for my position on something that I didn't know anything about, and thinking about, man, did I change anyone's opinion? Did I convince anyone that these substances were wrong? And then they're out there voting against these families trying to help, you know? And so some shame there. But you know, what hit my heart is just kids, you know? And that's important, you know? And so, yeah.
I honestly think being like a dad, like my dad has been so influential in my life. Like being a girl dad out there is just like such an important role. I mean, like being a parent in general, I think, as well, is super important. My question was something from my perspective, just because I come from a background of like bodybuilding, competing in fitness, all that kind of stuff, the steroid use, all of that in there that's like not talked about and it's like illegal, but everyone does it. And just even that story you were saying, Larry, about like, oh, it must be nice to be able to do a live stream and take 5 grams of mushrooms without worrying about your door being kicked in when that's happening, right? So, and people have done the groundwork so that that's possible, right? And so it's
Right.
just this weird thing of like people are like, oh, now I'm gonna make money off of it. So my question to you is like, if you were to forecast the next 10 years as specifically for athletics, because I'm interested in that, because I'm doing a superhero school, and this idea of like healing is very important, but also like, can we leverage these substances to make us better human beings and optimize things, like, and not just in sport, but just living in such a way, like being stronger, being able to run faster, being able to like play with your kids, like have aging not be like, oh, I want to look young, but just like, what the, does that actually mean in the sense of like, I'm going to just be able to be here for my grandkids and that kind of stuff. So just in the next 10 years, like how would you see like psychedelics, entheogens, and athletics, and like the sports science world, what would be your like ideal way of that kind of going forward?
Yeah, so great question. I like that. It's for me, you know, we talk about healing, learning, expanding at Unlimited Sciences, the expansion part, that's what I'm very hopeful for. I lay a foundation for my children of respect, and it's, you know, Khalil Gibran, your children are not your children. They are the slings and arrows of life longing for itself, or something to the degree that they're not yours, so don't try to make them whatever. So what I'm getting at is whatever they want to be, hopefully they're not coming to these circles for healing. They're coming for expansion. What are they going to do? And so the future of psychedelics as a performance enhancing drug, it would be, for me, what I foresee is a psychological advancement, a way of thinking and being creative and doing things like jiu-jitsu. I love jiu-jitsu because it's an art, mixed martial arts, right? They are arts. And when you see the best of the best do their thing, you can see the art. Throwing a punch, if you've never done it and you see someone who knows how to do it, you could physically see what they're doing. How can you get creative with your mind and expand your repertoire of physical? Right. And so when we move forward, I think some of these substances will certainly help with chronic traumatic encephalopathy, you know, concussion stuff
Brain
that
trauma
we
for sure.
see. But I think that if we're talking about an optimization of ourselves, I think it will be a more whole athlete. And when I say whole, I mean heart-centered. I know it sounds kind of crazy, but if you're a heart-centered, clear, untraumatized fighter, you're going to be a better fighter. You know, we think fighters are some angry person who just wants to beat someone up. And I see anger in the jiu-jitsu room flare up every once in a while, and it's the first way to get beat, right? And that's why some of these professional shit talkers like Conor McGregor, they do so good of getting into the mind of their opponent, and then they fall apart. So the expansion of psychedelics when it comes to athletes, I would say it would be more of a psychological improvement, that you are just so centered and so comfortable in your skin, it allows you to do incredible things.
Great answer. I really like that. And to add to that, there's that saying, right? Like, better to be a warrior in a garden than a gardener in a war, right? So it's about having all of those abilities at your disposal and also having the conscientiousness to know when to use it. And as you're saying, heart-centered way of like being an athlete, not, the ends may justify the means, but the means determine the ends, right? So I think it's like a big part of like all of that. So that was really great. Thank you for that.
Yeah, and you see that too with Clint. He passed away a few years ago, but Clint out of Detroit, a lot of the work that he was doing with the mushroom work there was through the Temerian Institute, which is an African martial arts, group that was teaching not only just the biopsycho spiritual way of approaching, engaging, and then how do we see things and how do we view beyond. And his whole stories and theories are pretty interesting when you look at how these were utilized over time as well for a variety of different things, including this sort of this inner growth that you're speaking of here. So yeah, that's interesting to think about. How do we become more full people, really, I think is a basis of some of that. Adele, if someone wants to come find you, unlimitedsciences.org, where else can they go to find out what you're up to and maybe some of these new projects? Do you have any new projects, maybe surveys or anything that you can share with people that you're ready to get out there? And where's that phone
Yeah,
number?
unlimitedscience.org is where you can learn more about our organization and kind of what we're up to. We're going to be putting out some proposals for some new studies, hopefully some UFC and NFL TBI related studies in 2026 is what we're hoping for. But as we were talking earlier before we jumped on, I got kicked off of Instagram, so I don't have an Instagram to put out there,
It's a
which
badge of
what a
honor.
blessing that is. Yeah, it's I couldn't help myself, so the universe helped me out and got me kicked off, so that was wonderful. And the other project I work on is Umbo, our functional mushroom company. That's with Rashad and Jake Plummer, who played ball for the Broncos and Cardinals. We have a functional mushroom company where we are getting more into the athletic. We're trying to educate folks on the fact that functional mushrooms are a game changer when it comes to athleticism. And I don't see functional mushrooms as a supplement as much as I do a food group, and if you think about the Olympics and you think about records being broken by milliseconds and millimeters, imagine if you had an entire food group that's like vegetables, that has all these compounds that you can't get anywhere else, and you start putting those in your body, it's not gonna be, you're not gonna be breaking records by 15 seconds, but every little bit helps. And at the end of the day, the longevity thing, I think everybody needs to be eating more mushrooms, psychedelics, and functional. But so getumbo.com is our business, and unlimitedsciences.org is the nonprofit.
And you mentioned a phone number earlier, a place people can call for more education. Do you have, is that on Unlimited Sciences?
Yeah, it's on unlimitedsciences.org. It's 1-888-210-3553. And that's a number that folks can call if they just have questions about psilocybin in particular. What do the studies say? What's a good dose? We'll answer those kinds of questions. And that seems like a bold question to ask, but we could say from the studies, we see that, so if people have questions and are interested or want a resource to give to someone who maybe needs a little bit more of a structured academic intro to utilizing these substances, that's where they could find it.
Yeah, and of course, dosing is so important now too, especially with so many varieties of mushrooms. I know the psilocybe azarescens are growing in the Bay Area right now, And it's like 1 gram of those is equivalent to 5 grams, where you're like, okay, I'm glad I didn't take
Yes.
less stuff time. So yeah, definitely important to know that. I'm sure you'll probably talk about that in your on your call as well. But for folks out there, just keep in mind that dosing changes according to the mushrooms as well, even in one batch, but definitely across species and definitely across different types of mushrooms.
Well, and at the end of the day, too, we could all rely on Brian Johnson's current experiment live stream to tell us how to use mushrooms
It's right.
in the
For
meantime.
Yeah.
$9.99, you know,
Maybe
whatever it is per
by
dosage.
our next podcast,
We could do like a react segment to that.
we'll just do a little
Our
synopsis.
own live stream reacting to that live stream.
Yes. I'm not going to watch it. You guys will have to let me know how that goes, but my
I
Lord.
think they did do the live stream at the beginning when they like had him have it, and then I think he was like, so many people have told me that these are sacred experiences. We decided to not necessarily live stream, but have someone just kind of tweet occasionally when things are coming up. So I think he
Oh,
saved himself.
interesting.
Starts
Yeah.
melting into the floor.
Good,
Everyone
because,
starts
yeah, he's.
fractalizing. He's like, "Are you seeing this?" Like, well,
Yeah.
we can see you are.
Right. Yeah. Well, we'll see how that goes.
Right. Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Dell, for being here today. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Rachel, for sticking by as always, doing all the great work behind the scenes. Reminder, everybody out there, we usually go live every 2 weeks, depending on schedule. Sometimes they fluctuate. So if you don't see us here in 1 week, just keep an eye on our YouTube, subscribe to our YouTube channel, because that's a good way to go about. Or you can watch our shows the following week when we put them on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. I believe our next show is going to be on the 23rd with Jehan. He was supposed to be on the last show, but because of schedule differences, that wasn't able to work out. But really excited to have him. He wrote the Psilocybin Connection book. Also a fellow student of mine at California Institute of Integral Studies. Not student of mine, but colleagues, I should say, at school there. So pretty excited to have him on. And then the last show of November, we're going to have Danielle Novella or Nova, who's part of Psychedelics Society San Francisco and is doing some addiction and psychedelics work and microdosing work with James Fenneman and others as well. So pretty exciting month coming up. We are pretty booked out until April, so keep your eyes open on the channel here. Lots of exciting guests, lots of new voices, lots of new conversations that we hadn't thought of before. Really want to kind of be open to any kind of thing that we talk about here, because there's so much to learn. And so thank you, Dell, for bringing some of that here today and for sharing your insights. See you next Sunday, and thank you everyone for listening in. Dell and Rachel for the conversation. Until next time, tune in, stay rooted, and let's grow together. Have a great Sunday, everyone. Bye bye now.
Until next time, bye.
Thank you.